May it please the court, good morning to each of you. My name is Gregory Grab, and I'm the attorney representing Edward Velasco in this proceeding. I wish to thank you in advance for the careful review of the review of the briefs submitted and for the opportunity to present oral argument on the issues. Quite frankly, I've spent a considerable amount of time preparing my arguments that Mr. Velasco should receive the benefit of the November 1st, 2002 amendment to Section 2D1, period 1A3 of the Sentencing Guidelines, known as Amendment 640, which added an offense cap of 30 for individuals receiving a mitigating role adjustment. Mr. Velasco was sentenced on July 9, 2002, under the 2000 guidelines, which did not provide for such a cap. However, Mr. Velasco did receive a mitigating role adjustment in the sentence as a minimal participant. Amendment 640 was added because the Commission determined that ordinarily a maximum base offense level of level 30 adequately represents or reflected the culpability of a defendant who qualifies for a mitigating role adjustment. The District Court determined Mr. Velasco's base offense level at level 32, which was consistent with the 2000 guidelines then in effect. However, if Mr. Velasco had been sentenced after November 1st, 2002, his base offense level would have been level 30. Consequently, the primary focus of my preparation for today's hearing was to address the issue of whether the application of Amendment 640 was retroactive and therefore a viable issue in this appeal. I understand that Amendment 640 is not specifically listed in the Sentencing Guidelines, Section 1B1, period 10, as having a retroactive effect. The law in this circuit is that the substantive amendments to the guidelines that occur between the date of sentencing and the resolution of an appeal have no retroactive effect unless specifically referenced in Section 1B1, period 10. That's the Ortiz case. However, amendments that simply clarify the guidelines rather than substantively change them can be applied retroactively, and that's the holding of the Sanders case. Basically, I was prepared to argue that although both the amended text and the commentary associated with the Amendment 640 was silent on the issue of retroactivity, the question could still be resolved by examining whether the amendment simply clarified the guidelines rather than substantively changed them. There's a considerable authority in the circuit where the courts have determined the retroactivity of various amendments by using the clarification versus substantive analysis, substantive change analysis. However, my argument that Amendment 640 simply clarified the guidelines was squarely rejected by this court within the last week. On October 30th, 2003, in the case of United States versus Diaz Cardenas, I only have the Westlaw site on that. The Westlaw site is 2003 WL 224-55762, Ninth Circuit, California. This court ruled that Amendment 640 cannot be applied retroactively.
Okay, finding, I guess you better move on to your other arguments then. No, I appreciate
what, I'd like to do, though, Judge, is because the case hasn't...
It's not final, you need to preserve
it. It's not final at this point. It hasn't been six days ago.
You don't know whether our petition for a hearing
is... Right, I wanted to bring it to the court's attention and then reserve the issues if I could in case there's... further on to the appeal. Knowing that, Judge, I would move on to my other comments. Initially, I would like to argue that Mr. Velasco clearly had a minimal rather than a minor participatory role in the offenses pursuant to Section 3B1, period 2 of the guidelines. The district court found that he was a minor participant in the conspiracy, resulting in a two-level decrease pursuant to Section 3B1, period 2B. Our position is that he was a minimal participant pursuant to Section 3B1, period 2A of the Guidelines Manual, and therefore he should have been granted a four-level decrease. The offenses charged in this case arose after a two-year investigation conducted by both federal and state officials. The investigation resulted in 7 indictments involving over 70 defendants who were charged with multiple violations of the federal narcotics laws, including prohibiting the operation of a continuing criminal enterprises, conspiracy to deliver and distribute heroin, cocaine, methamphetamine, and marijuana. Multiple wiretaps were involved, and these wiretaps involved resulted in over 1,000 recorded conversations. Now, with respect to Mr. Velasco, the pre-sentence report noted that, quote, the facts of this case suggest that Velasco was among the least culpable of those involved in the conduct of the group conspirators. In this regard, the evidence shows that Velasco's role was limited to transporting the 51.5 grams of pure methamphetamine, which resulted in his arrest on April 27, 2000. After his arrival on Maui, Velasco contacted an individual in California, who in turn contacted an individual known as Felipe Ruiz Castro. There is no evidence that Velasco was involved in any other conduct pertaining to the conspiracy, end quote. This is from the pre-sentence report. The record indicates that Velasco merely acted once as a mule in this apparently vast and extended conspiracy. Minimal participant status must be based on the culpability of a defendant's conduct relative to other participants in the offense. And I'll leave out the footnotes which define that. I'm sure that the court is aware of what the standards are. But I would point out that there was no evidence submitted to the district court which showed that Mr. Velasco understood or had knowledge of the scope or the structure of the enterprise and the activities of others involved, other than just a general knowledge that there was a smuggling operation going on. I was able to find a similar factual scenario, which was reviewed by this court in United States versus Sanderson. I can leave the site out if that's okay. In that decision, this court held that the low culpability of the defendant's conduct warranted a 4-level adjustment. Mr. Velasco's conduct clearly should have been deemed minimal and not minor. Second, the sentencing guidelines provide that the sentencing court may depart downward if the applicable criminal history category, quote, significantly overrepresents the seriousness of a defendant's criminal conduct. And that's taken from the sentencing guidelines section 4A1.
One of the problems with that issue is whether we're allowed to review that.
Judge, I believe that it can be reviewed under a clearly erroneous error standard.
I thought there were some cases that treated that as if it were a downward departure, in which case we wouldn't be able to review it, but I'm not certain.
Judge, it's my understanding that that the court does have discretion to make a determination that the criminal history of a defendant is not really accurate of what happened. And as you may recall, the entire criminal history of Mr. Velasco was based upon 2 DUIs, which he received in California.
I do recall that the fact that it's
pardon me?
I do recall, yes, the facts. Yes. He had 2 DUIs and those were his only two.
Yes, Judge, and with the associated probation violation, which added another 2 points, it put him up into a Category 3. I'd point out to the court that any other defendant who has a, say, a felony, any type of felony, over a year and a month in jail or in prison would receive 3 points. His criminal history record. Now, somebody who's been convicted of murder, I think, is underrepresented in terms of his criminal history based on that scenario. And I believe the reverse is just true here in Mr. Velasco's case, that an examination of the way that the chemical or the history category is calculated, it turns out that DUIs are way at the very end of the offenses which would count. And in fact, it's not even enumerated in the normal categories which enumerates which offenses are counted and which ones are not. It's actually contained in a footnote which follows in the commentary. My point is this, that the combination of the two DUIs plus the probation violation, which admittedly are serious violations, put him into a criminal category which overrepresented his propensity to commit crimes. He's in a category higher than somebody who had had a very serious felony on his record. Now, I could find nothing in the guidelines which precluded the district court from departing and found, as I've argued, that placement in Category 3 rather than Category 2 significantly exaggerated the seriousness of his conduct.
I think we're going to have to bring this to an end. We've got to our 10 minutes. And if you want a minute to wrap it up.
If I could, Judge. The other issues I'll just very briefly on, related to that, Judge, is that I think that we can consider Mr. Velasco's conduct as aberrant behavior. This particular downward departure provision has been codified November 1st, 2002 in Section 5K2.20 of the guidelines that would apply to this case. And, in fact, there was prior case law which the courts had granted substantial departures in this area even when they had a criminal history. I would argue that given the aberrant behavior, that he should have been given a substantial downward decrease. But finally, Your Honor, Mr. Velasco demonstrated his acceptance of responsibility contrary to what the government has held. He didn't plead out on the end of trial. At the end of trial, he had made his intentions known early on in the case, and that he would change his plea following the disposition of his motion to suppress. The change of plea came out the eve of trial because there was a delay in working out the details. Even though the government says they had prepared for trial, it is actually true, but it's not quite true to Mr. Velasco because they had to prepare for the motion for suppression in any event. Irrespective of whether the government objected on that grounds, I still believe that he is entitled to a decrease based upon Section 3E1, period 1B1, because he, quote, timely provided complete information to the government concerning his own involvement.
I think we're way over, and you covered all of this pretty well in the brief.
I did, Your Honor. And just as a note of explanation, Judge, I spent an awful lot of time on this issue of on the issue of Amendment 640, and it was only yesterday I find the case from last week, and Judge, that put me at a disadvantage in here today.
We understand.
I apologize that I've repeated myself.
No, you haven't. We understand.
We prepared for it the same way you did.
Yes.
Thank you very much.
Please, the court. Tom Ellick for the United States. Good morning again, Your Honor. This is a case where I believe the district court judge carefully went through a sentencing hearing that was bifurcated to concern herself with the question of the number of convictions, the question of the defendant's minor versus minimal role, the question of whether the defendant had timely cooperated or had provided full and complete information to the United States in a timely fashion or made a notification that he would not go to trial in sufficient time to save the court and the United States sufficient assets in that regard, in judicial economy. I'll submit on the brief, unless the court has any particular questions as to the facts or.
Did any defendant in this multi-defendant case get a minimal role adjustment?
No one that was carrying this amount of drugs. No courier did.
That wasn't the answer. Did any defendant?
I think there were people that got minor roles.
Right,
I'm not sure about minimal, Your Honor.
No.
I don't think so.
Was there any evidence that he had done anything other than carry the drugs on this one occasion?
Other than the telephone calls that were charged? No.
What do you mean?
Well, he had made a telephone call the day before asking for money to ensure that he would be able to travel. Come from California to Hawaii. He had been intercepted talking to Mr. Ruiz.
Right. That's on this one occasion. So
yes.
I asked, is there any evidence that this was anything other than an isolated occasion?
No. I'm not aware of it, Your Honor.
What was his sentence?
119 months? 120 months, Your Honor. Imposed on July 9th, 2015. The court gave him the minor role, not the minimal role.
Yeah. Right. My question was, did anybody get a minimal role?
I don't remember them. I don't remember that. People did get minor roles. I don't remember minimal roles. No courier got a minimal role. I know that. And this was one of the larger interceptions of ICE that we made in Hawaii. We caught it on the mainland with other individuals. Before it got to Hawaii. This was one of the few that we caught at Kahului. We tried to keep it because it was a wiretrap. We tried to do the interceptions, intercepting the couriers as far away from the wiretrap, as far away from Maui as possible. We tried to do the interceptions on the mainland. And we did. Ontario, LAX, Honolulu. We did it on the other island where they took it to the other island, to the Big Island. This was...
How many people were involved in this conspiracy?
There were two, in this conspiracy, Judge.
No, I mean
there were five indictments.
This is part of a general conspiracy, wasn't it?
There were five indictments in this conspiracy. Five separate indictments of roughly 10 people apiece. I think we indicted 62 in this Felipe Ruiz Castro indictment, which was the Mexican restaurant in Lahaina. And then in Jorge Salazar Guillon, the landscaper that was running heroin largely, there were 86 defendants in the two ranks, the two separate ranks.
Did any of them get less than 10 years?
Yes. There were a number of people that of course, qualified for a safety valve. A number of people cooperated right off the bat, Your Honor. And we filed motions for downward departures for substantial assistance on many of them. I could look at the indictment.
Curious in general about how this all fit together.
Yes.
The ones that got the downward departures are the ones that testified against either superiors or underlings.
Either superiors or underlings are agreed to right off the bat. Assisted Mr. Ruiz got a substantial downward departure. He got he pled to a continuing criminal enterprise and got a sentence of, I think Judge Mulway sentenced him. I think he got 8.5 years.
So he was one of the ringleaders?
He was the ringleader, Your Honor. It was his restaurant.
And this guy did one transaction?
One.
And he had two prior drunk drivings and he got more than this guy who's running the whole drug operation.
He was also found to be not candid by Judge Mulway, and Mr. Ruiz was found to be very truthful by the judge.
Mr. Ruiz is a fine, upstanding citizen?
Oh, he's not a fine, upstanding citizen, and he's serving that sentence. He is serving that sentence, but he cooperated.
Doesn't that seem, this has nothing to do with it, because we're at the end of the day.
Yes, sir.
Doesn't that seem a little anomalous to you that the ringleader of the whole operation would get 8.5 years, and a guy who makes one delivery, as far as you know, would get 10 years? Isn't there something wrong with that?
If Congress has said there are built-in carrots and sticks to the sentencing guidelines, to the statutes, the Title 21 and Title 18, that allow individuals to assist and better their positions, This gentleman did not. The defendant did not. He was not truthful with us. He held the government's feet to the fire, made them put on the motion to suppress. He was found to be...
Well, you know, you're not supposed to penalize people for filing motions to suppress.
Oh, no, absolutely not. But
so it's not as if he did anything wrong other than assert a constitutional right.
And he did. He asserted his constitutional rights all the way and did not help the United States in other cases, which he could have done, which what Mr. Ruiz did and a number of other individuals did.
But there's a certain amount of irony, and this isn't the only case we see it in other jurisdictions, where the kingpin and Congress was trying to target kingpins of the operation, get off with comparatively light sentences, and the people who were working for them are sentenced to many more years.
Well, of course, we didn't argue for a less than 10-year sentence. We argued for a substantial sentence over 10 years. We argued for a 12-and-a-half-year sentence for Mr. Ruiz. Judge Mulway gave him an 8-and-a-half-year sentence because of the amount of dope that he brought in and the harm he had caused to Maui, to our district. We could not ignore that. He did not have the prior convictions. He did not have the criminal history, and his guideline range was higher. He had a mandatory minimum for 20 years under the 848, Your Honor, of course. And we took that into consideration. But we, of course, are obligated to tell the court. We told the court. His counsel was good counsel, argued very vigorously that he had cooperated. He had testified for the United States in a couple of trials. He had a number of things going for him that made him a sympathetic character at sentencing. He had a child that was physically had a problem with him. And he had done what we had done. When we filed the motion for substantial assistance, the court is well aware that the district court can go all the way down, can go all the way down to what it feels is appropriate. And we argued for over 10 years because we did believe that he had caused substantial harm to our community.
Thank you, Ken.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Okay. Thank you very much, Counsel. The case will be submitted. The final case of the morning.